Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
I want you to take a scroll through any news feed, or at least have a think about taking a scroll through any news feed, and it won't take you long to come across the latest buzzword. It's not hashtag wellness. It's empathy. I don't reckon that's a bad thing. Whether we're being told, though, empathy is on the decline, or how to cultivate it, or why pupils need it more than ever, empathy has become a sought-after quality in job candidates, which I think would have surprised people from a few generations ago. Toughen up, princess. We've all heard that. And yet schools rarely teach empathy. So apparently it also leads to a happier life. So we've got lots to learn about empathy, and we're about to learn it right now. CEO Damon O'Sullivan is with us. Hello, Damon.
Hey, Miss.
And designer Claire Beale joined me, and they're going to discuss the importance of empathy in everything from design to corporate leadership. All right, I'll start with you, Damon. How do you define empathy?
I think quite basically it's just understanding another person, their perspective, their context.
And has that been important in your corporation, which is the Today Corporation? You want to explain what that
is? Yeah, so we're a design business. So we use human-centred design to solve problems. So we design strategy, we make websites, we design services, but it's all based around human-centeredness, which is really around building out from empathy of users.
Human-centeredness is not how we smell, though. It's like it's basing the human
at the middle,
the centre of design. So what sort of people do you design for?
So our business is around benefiting people and planet. So we have a sort of purpose-based business. So we spend a lot of time designing government services, usually to be more accessible. And we design for not-for-profits, and we design for, I guess, the social end of business.
Okay. Claire, what about you? How would you define empathy?
G'day, Miff. I think Damon summed it up really well. It is being able to see things through another's perspective. So for a designer, it's often about being aware of the unique context that you occupy. Your upbringing, your background, your training, your way of seeing the world is not the only way. And I think that from my understanding of empathy, it's not to be confused with sympathy, but it is about being able to, as I said, see things from multiple perspectives, or from the perspective of someone that is not you.
That's very clear, isn't it? And why do you think we haven't really approached design work from an empathetic perspective before?
Oh, because it's hard.
Yeah, you've got to do some work, don't you? Yeah, in order to have empathy for others.
Yeah, it's I'm sure Damon can speak to this as well, but I think that in the past there's been this idea around designing for the masses, or designing for everyone, is, you know, often a one size fits all, which we know doesn't fit anyone. But it's quite a quick way of solving a problem, and mass manufacturing, but it doesn't require as much effort as it does to take a step back from providing a solution and first actually understanding the problem.
Right. Okay. So it's, the arts in particular has a history of having the hero designer who just designs what he wants or she wants, usually a he in the past.
Yep.
A hero designer who gets away with all sorts of business because they are the creative genius and they are at the core of everything. Do we need to drop that idea, Claire, do you think? Or is it still important?
Oh, Miff, I think we need to lighten up. I mean, I think that when I used to explain this in education to students, you know, the difference between an artistic practice and a design practice is that art, you do have the luxury of being self-focused. You know, it's about how you see the world and your response, and you create a work in reaction to that often. It's not the whole way, but to be simple, that's a good way to explain it. Design is an externally driven practice. It does require you as a designer understanding how to apply your knowledge and skill and understanding of the world and techniques and processes of design, but looking at it from the perspective of that end user. Who is the person that I am developing a solution for? And I think that what I'm seeing more often these days in design is that we have practices like Today, we have other designers and other organisations who are really thinking through before racing to the end of a solution, actually thinking through the why and the who, and really not just doing it in a tokenistic way, but actually doing deep consultation and thinking through processes like co-design.
Yeah, sounds really interesting. Have you seen, have we seen examples of this in great design?
Absolutely. I think last year's winner of the Good Design Award, which was a hearing aid, modular hearing aid designed by Blamey Saunders, and the designer involved in that was Dr. Leah Heiss, was a modular hearing aid that was co-designed with the users. And one of the interesting things that Leah talks about when she worked on the process with Blamey Saunders is this is an organisation that is well known for designing incredibly good technology around hearing aids. The challenge that we have with hearing aid wearers or for hearing aid wearers is a few things. One is the stigma of being seen to be wearing a hearing aid. The other is the way in which it's designed so that it's not necessarily easy to work with. It's difficult to adjust. The batteries run flat, particularly with an ageing population with more and more people experiencing hearing loss. We've heard stories of people who couldn't change the battery in their hearing aid, so waited for a family member to come and visit to help them change the battery. So they were without hearing for as long as it takes for that person to visit. So what they were doing was working through what are the common problems, and then Leo and the team at Blamey Saunders worked with a whole range of users on the prototyping process to solve some of those challenges. And it's a beautiful gem-like solution. So this hearing aid that's called the Facet is modular. It comes in a very small pod that is its place for recharging. It has interchangeable battery pieces that are attached with a magnet. So it's actually good for somebody who may not have as good manual dexterity as they had in the past. And it's easy to operate and you can adjust it using an app. So they're solving a lot of the problems that hearing aid users have around needing someone else to make the adjustments for them.
Right, user-friendly.
Really user-friendly.
Is what they used to say. We're talking about empathy in design and work and business with Claire Beale, Executive Director of Design Tasmania, and Damon O'Sullivan, CEO of Today. Damon, I've had a discussion with one of your counterparts at Today talking about neurodiversity and the digital divide. And you know, to sort of break that down, that's neurodiversity is something that, well, it's very different for everybody. But in terms of design, making website design more accessible for everybody is something I hadn't thought about until then. Can you explain that a little bit further for us?
So I think, as probably Claire touched on, I think that idea of digital is a great enabler of big complex systems and it's an amazing thing. I think what it also can do is to separate people from one another. So the people making the thing get further and further away from the people using the thing, almost by design. We had some good chats with Autism CRC around neurodiversity and digital accessibility, essentially, which is really, again, based on understanding people's lived experience of digital systems. So for the neurodiverse communities, so people with autism, people with ADD, dyslexia, etc., so people that see and think differently in the world, the question is, what do we need to do with our digital systems to make sure they're accessible? So I think, you know, 10 years ago, digital systems and services were almost nice to have, but more and more they're becoming essential services for your life to live a sort of fair life in the community. And some are owned by government, some are owned by private services like Amazon. So I think when we think about is the web open to everyone and is it good to use for everyone, it's asking these questions, and neurodiversity is a good example. Are people equally able to access the sort of services we take for granted every day and increasingly will become the only channel they can use into the future?
Yeah, and it's important to cater for that, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's fascinating. Empathy in terms of design, in work, in life, in art is what we are discussing. Let's get back to education and educating people to be empathetic. Does you're an educator, Claire, as well as executive director of Design Tasmania. Does this begin in early years? Are we brought up to think about empathy, or like how do you see it as an educator?
Oh, I think so. My background was in tertiary education, and also I come from a family of teachers, so I've been hearing this around the dinner table for the last 25 years. But ultimately, recognising and cultivating empathy in kids as they grow is going to be more important, and we're seeing that to be more important than many other skills, because it is ultimately about trying to encourage a community that is aware and in tune with each other. And that doesn't mean that this is a vanillarisation of how we do things or that everybody gets a ribbon for showing up. It's actually important as a life skill, because if you have an ability to understand the position of others or the context of others, then you're better able to react and respond when you're faced with challenges. To get to your point about how do you teach that? Well, that's the million-dollar question. I think that it is a team effort, and it sounds really trite to say that, but I think that when I've seen kids coming through from high school who have not necessarily had that opportunity to develop that awareness, they struggle. They struggle in understanding how to work in a different context. You know, having moved out of the pressure cooker of school, where it's about passing NAPLAN or passing your exams or getting A's or whatever it is that's been driving you, when you come into the university environment, the emphasis isn't necessarily on grades. It is about how you interact and work with others in groups, how you develop those skills to work in industry. And I'm sure that Damon would be recruiting for those sorts of skills in their practice. So it's difficult in one sense to wrap your head around it as an educator, but it's something that is glaringly obvious when it's absent.
Mm. Damon, as a CEO, how do you bring empathy to a leadership role, and how do you look for empathy in say, potential employees?
I think in terms of a role of running a business, it's just essential. So I think it's at the core of designing anything that works. So that might be how you recruit people. It might be how you talk to your customers. It could be anything. But unless you sort of deeply understand them, you're essentially shooting blind. Mm-hmm. So at the very least, it's just ineffective not to be empathetic, if that makes sense. In terms of recruiting for it, I feel like it's disconnected to a very natural form of human problem solving. Like, I think if I was designing something for you, Miff, the least you'd expect me to do is talk to you and ask you, you know, does something suit, et cetera.
Yeah.
So it's kind of basic problem solving, and it's connected, I think, to curiosity and creativity. So the sort of things we look at when we're hiring for it are really people's ability to think around a problem and think broadly rather than just, I guess, shoot for solutions quickly.
We've got a phone call here from Monique. Hi, Monique.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Look, I was listening to the conversation, and I just wanted to raise the question. Do you think that in design, like, I'm no designer, but do you think that it's a lack of empathy, or do you think it's just, you know, the technology that they have at the time? So, for example, with the hearing aid, like, I'm sure they would have liked to create one which had better battery life, and that was, you know, easy to put in and easy to use, but maybe at the time when it was created, that wasn't possible. Like, do you think that it's only just empathy that is lacking, or
the technology? That's a really interesting question. Thanks, Monique. I don't know who'd be best to answer that.
Damon.
I think in a sense it's you're right, like, technology and advances enable things as time goes on, but I think it's kind of surprising when you look around how few things are actually deliberately designed. Like, many things, many services and products, they kind of come into the world and organically kind of bump along for a few years. And people sometimes for decades never stand back and say, how should this be, or what should we do if we really compose something here? So I think it's a bit of both. Like, I think sometimes, especially in science, technology, engineering, invention sometimes comes first and is the source of innovation rather than human need. So often I think there's those examples where something amazing is invented, but until it fits well into a human hand or a human life, it's not well adopted.
It's also, I think, that idea of advances in technology are also why sometimes there's a lag. You know, it's that we there can be the shiniest new thing invented, but if we can't understand the context in which it's applied, and as Damon said, putting it in the human hand, I'm thinking about something really simple, such as a good dining chair. So we have a designer here in Tasmania, Rye Dunsmuir, who makes a contemporary dining chair called the Exo Chair. And exo meaning exoskeleton. It's this idea of a really good, effective support. But it was designed through doing extensive research and consultation with a cancer support centre in northern Tasmania. And he actually worked with focus groups and worked with end users to think about testing and prototyping the different user requirements. So you think a chair is a chair, but actually how many times have you sat in a really uncomfortable one?
Too many.
Too many times. And when you sit in this chair, because I'm privileged to have one in our gallery, and I get to sit in it, as you can if you come and visit us, it really solves a whole lot of issues around stability, accessibility. It's lightweight. It gives you good lumbar support. It's very comfortable. The material is Tasmanian oak, and he's selected the material in a way that is about minimizing waste. That's working with standard sizes. It's a design solution to the dining chair that we would have, I mean, every designer loves designing a chair, let's face it. Every product designer wants to design a sexy new chair. But what's so beautiful about this chair is that it is humble in its overall appearance. It's not flashy, but it has been designed with a particular end user in mind. And that person who is working through cancer treatment or recovery needs a comfortable thing to sit on and doesn't need to feel like they're sitting in a hospital chair. And I think that chair is just a really good example of someone who hasn't really had to think about great leaps of advancement in technology, but it is very much about the attitude towards who is going to use this. And it is about helping to co-design and problem solve. And I think that that's what Damon is getting at as well. It's creativity and curiosity, you know, asking the question about, it's very easy for a designer to be lazy and say, oh, they just want a chair, I'll give them a fancy chair. Yeah. But actually to take the time and take the energy and the effort and the apply their empathy in the right way, that makes it all the different.
Claire, that is a very good point. And it seems like empathy is something that works in design. But I think, Damon, you can maybe talk to this as a CEO. Someone just sent a text. Christine's gone, empathy won't help you climb the corporate ladder. Quite the contrary. The less empathy, the better it seems.
Oh, how sad.
Yeah. Well, that's a general assumption quite often about workplaces currently. Is that changing? I mean, I did see an article the other day saying being able to be empathetic with your employees is a great managerial position these days. Is it changing? Is that?
Oh, look, I hope work culture is changing. I think it is. I guess going back to that point around empathy is not sympathy. Empathy can be fairly cold-hearted. It's a means to an end, it's not an end. So empathy is literally rooting yourself in a depth of understanding about someone else's perspective or of the world. You can use that for whatever means you want, really. So I think in terms of it's not about necessarily acting well. I think human nature comes into it. So I think what we find is once our clients experience their users more deeply, their natural inclination is to help the people. They just want to help the people, and it becomes a priority. But in itself, I think empathy is just around, it's another very useful input about deeply understanding the world from other people's points of view, which I think would work in a cold-hearted career kind of plan as well.
Yeah.
if you think about it this way, if you deeply understand what's motivating the people around you, then you can tailor your response. And you can present them with the outcomes or the solutions or the ideas that you know they, you know, being very calculated, know that they want to hear or see. But also you can look at things, and I think as an executive myself, you know, I look at things in terms of it's not about being the leader out the front. it's actually about how you bring the people along with you. And so if you use that skill, that understanding of empathy and not sympathy, not all sitting down in the, you know, in the pity corner when someone's having a bad day, but actually understanding this is what's going on for this person. How can I actually show that I am, that I care, that they are having a bad day, but I can find a way to motivate them, then you're going to be a really effective leader. And I think that this idea of being cold-hearted and all for yourself around climbing the corporate ladder, well, it might help you climb really quickly, but watch out when you're on the way back down.
This is really interesting. And I haven't even thought about it from this perspective either, because I'm able-bodied and it's pretty straightforward when it comes to unpacking things. But someone's written, packaging people have no empathy for older people. Mm. Try opening a bottle or try to pop a tablet or open a lolly bag. Fair point.
And I think this is it. This is, in some ways, it feels like for a long time, the people that made things got separated from the people that use things. I think maybe industrial design and product design led us back a bit. But you see this, I think you see empathetic design playing out in that way, that people are starting to consider, well, what about the person who has arthritis and needs to open this box? And you know, businesses like Microsoft have started to look at not only how to make their software and their hardware kind of accessible, but look at that packaging piece. So how does someone with limited mobility open a box? How do we make it as easy as possible, et cetera? So I think, again, as a tool, I think empathy can just lead to really bright thinking. I still think there's genius in design. I think empathy is an input, but I think with empathy, you find all these opportunities that you might not have seen before, which is you know, part of the magic.
Mm. Just quickly, this text I might pose to you, Claire. Mm-hmm. Speaking of accessibility, that chair just discussed is over $1,000. Mm-hmm. Not many people are going to be able to afford that.
I knew someone was going to step in.
Being a critical part of accessibility and maybe even empathy. That's from Marnie.
Yes, thank you, Marnie. Thank you for that comment. I'll certainly take that as a comment. I think it's the thing to be clear on is that not accessibility or the cost of that particular chair, that chair is one solution. It's not the only solution. And I think when we talked last week, I banged on about this a bit, in that one of the challenges for designers now is to get that balance right. It's the understanding of making things accessible and affordable. And I think that when you start to open up the idea of looking through the lens of empathy as one of the elements that you consider, sustainability, cost, all of those elements of design make it a really complex problem. And we can't give one solution. These are wicked problems. You know, they require complicated and nuanced solutions. So, yes, that one chair, the ultimate chair. But I could also throw it back this way. Yes, you could go to brand name store here and buy the cheap chair. How long will that last you? Will it be comfortable? Will it serve its purpose? It might for a short term. So when we were talking around this idea of sustainability and consumer culture, you know, Marie Kondoing your house, your design, you know, your Billy bookcase, you know, we're faced with these dilemmas all the time. I think that drilling it down to just one, oh, but that's very expensive, therefore I can't access it, is limiting you. It's actually thinking through ways in which you can make that accessible. Now, in terms of that particular chair, the Australian government has a program called Collect, which is a scheme that is designed to encourage everyday Australians to acquire Australian art and also design products. And the idea is basically that it's an interest-free loan that allows you to take the product home and pay it off over time. So if you really want that XO chair, you can get it.
I love that idea, Collect. Mm. I will be looking that up immediately after this chat, but sadly,
change my world.
We both have to wind this up, sadly. Empathy in art and work and design, fascinating conversation. Damon and Claire, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
brilliant stuff. Damon O'Sullivan, the CEO of Today, and Claire Beale, the Executive Director of Design Tasmania.
Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.